Welcome to the Talk of Trent Bridge podcast. Today we've got two very special guests. We've got Andy Pick and Steve Burke. Mate, it's looking immaculate out there, isn't it?
It's getting there. Yeah, it's nice. A bit of sunshine yesterday. It really helps.
Well, the weather's been really good, hasn't it? Is that good at this time of year, or is it bad? Are you expecting it, or...?
It peaks too early, doesn't it? It's too hot. You know, normally I'm expecting a lot of rain.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to be too hot whilst... sort of whilst we're away and stuff. Certainly last year it was a bit of a nightmare for you groundsmen, wasn't it, with a lot of rain falling?
Yeah, it was in the snow, you know, parts of the year, and then once you get a poor April, it's normally a good summer. So that's the key sometimes. Okay. Poor April, good summer. So we'll put up with that. Cold and wet like last year, then a decent summer.
We'll take a poor April then, will we, end?
I think we will.
It's good for us bowlers though, isn't it? Bit of zip in the wicket.
Bit of zip in the wicket. Can't beat a bit of green, can you?
No, you
especially
can't.
Now they keep changing the ball and bringing in heavy rollers and all the different bits they're going to tinker around with. It's we like a bit of green, don't we?
I've just heard a new rule, actually. Moores has just told me about a new rule coming in. I don't know if everybody knows about it, but you're only allowed to ask the umpire to change the ball twice now.
That's right.
In your whole 80 overs.
Right.
So you're only allowed to ask. I don't know what consists as one ask. Maybe if you're walking past him, like, this ball's a bit out of shape, isn't it?
They've got a device as well. They've got a device that they're going to put it through. So it's not like they're not just going to have a look at it like they normally do and then chuck it back to you and tell there's nothing wrong with it, even if there is. They put it through this thing. And it either goes through. If it goes through, then it's all right because it's still in shape. If it doesn't, if it's got a corner on it or whatever, I guess they'll change it. But yeah, two asks. Yes, I don't know. We'll have to clarify that, whether a cheeky little mate not sure about this ball as you walk past, like say, or if you present it, if he gets his gauge out,
well, you never know.
That counts, doesn't it? Yeah.
We'll have to clarify that one before the start of the season, don't we? Was it tough for you last year, Berksy? Was it a tough year?
It was a tough year because we started a month later at Trent Bridge.
Yeah, we did, didn't we?
Everything was pushed in, so the pitches never came back. So the 2020 pitches weren't quite as good as they were the year before because everything was crammed in. So it was nice to have an easy start at the beginning, but then everything just got crammed in and it made it harder and harder.
Yeah, we didn't mind the T20 pitches being a little bit off, because I think in previous years I think everybody that comes here is like, I cannot wait to bat at Trent Bridge. I don't know who tells you to put those ropes that close either, but I think we need to start having a word about that.
Well, there's about three or four people tell me that.
I'm not one of them, by the way.
We move them about 10 times during the game or leading up to the game.
Yeah, because we don't actually have that many match. I mean, people that obviously from the side look and say we've got a lot of pitches there, but we actually don't have a tremendous amount of match pitches compared to somewhere like the Oval or somewhere like that, do we?
No, we've got nets at Trent Bridge on the square, and we've got 13 pitches for the first team, but then half of them you can't use for 2020. So you end up with four in the middle, but then by the time you take the internationals, you've perhaps got a couple that, you know, and you've got to save some for TV, so it makes it really difficult.
And obviously with the World Cup being this year, I imagine you're going to have a lot more sort of in the middle prepared.
Yeah, all your top five international pitches this year will be used. So every time the 2020 competition started, you know, we're going to have to scratch our heads and find out where we're going to play.
We don't mind that. Just prepare slow, low.
Yeah.
Push them boundaries out. We're not too bothered. Is it an exciting time for you as ground staff to be able to prepare World Cup pitches?
It's exciting, but it's hard work. It's a lot of pressure. You know, you'll be working, you know, maybe 15-hour days because you've got training most days leading up to two teams coming in. We've got Lady Bay where they're going to train as well. So we could have three or four teams training in one day. So, and everybody wants the best of everything.
Getting pulled about all over the shop, weren't you?
Yeah, but as long as we keep smiling and, you know, if we do a job, we should be all right.
Well, we seem to keep breaking records here, so I'm pretty sure they're pretty happy to come here and have a bat. Not so much have a bowl, but never mind. Picky, how are the cartel looking, mate?
Strong, mate, to be fair. Strong, yeah, this winter. Yep, I think everybody's sort of got over any niggles that they've had. So, obviously, it's great to see the likes of Paul Coughlin running in off his full run up and showing what he can do. As obviously people like yourself who've had a little bit of a tangle with injury, and Jack Blatherwick and people like that. But it seems at the moment, touch wood, that we've got a full bill of health, and obviously getting Zach back after the Lions, and he's got through his winter, which is probably the hardest winter he's had for, well, during his career. So for him to come back in good shape and whatever, it's an exciting time. It'll be tough on guys. There'll be a lot of jockeying for position to get in the team, but that's a good thing, really.
You mentioned likes of, well, sort of seeing Cogger's as almost a new signing this year. Yeah. We've got obviously Chappie coming in. How do you go about sort of looking after these new lads that are coming? Do you go in and try and implement your stuff straight away, or would you sort of, I don't know, watch them for a few weeks and then try and put your stuff in?
I have a few sort of basics that I look for in individuals' bowling actions and stuff, but generally it's, I'm not trying to make everybody the same. I'm not trying to make everybody bowl to one template. So really, with the new lads, it's more a matter of sitting down and saying, right, okay, so when you bowl well, at this level, most of the lads understand their action. So when you bowl well, what sort of things are in your action? So if I'm going to look for a couple of things that hold your action together, what are they? And generally they tell me, and then it's just a matter of me observing them. So that's how I would work, like with Chappie and Coggers. That's how I would work. So when James Pattinson came in and when Ben Hilfenhaus came in, when the international players come in, same thing. What is it that holds your action together? What's sort of the glue that holds your action together? And then we go from there. And you know, it's my job then just to keep an eye on the fundamentals, really, in case any of those sneak in. And but ultimately, it's down to the bowler. I don't really try and get anybody to do anything. It's my job to suggest a few things. If I can back it up with some video, then that's great. But ultimately, it's their action. That's how they earn their living. And I wouldn't expect anybody just to change something just because I've said, well, I think it might be an idea. So.
Yeah. We touched on it a little bit about, obviously, playing white ball cricket out here at times. In the past, it's been really tough for us bowlers. I'm guessing that's one thing, sort of, as a bowling coach, more that you have to sort of get over to these new lads that might not have played. I mean, Chappie's played at Leicester, that's quite a big playing field. Mm. Cogger's at Durham, that's a big playing field. It's about when they come into that white ball setup, about them understanding that, you know, your expectations might have to change a little bit, and understanding sort of like the scoring areas around here. And I think with the likes of Cunny coming on board now, the analyst, obviously you two working together quite closely through white ball cricket, sort of getting that across to them about obviously about playing here at white ball cricket.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, you know, you were part of the attack sort of 2 years ago where we were, you know, we had a couple of searching moments upstairs when we'd come off and we'd gone for 200, because everybody's perception of 200 in a T20 is that you bowl badly. Mm. As it was, we didn't particularly think we'd bowl badly, and the result of the game bore that out. So, you know, the Yorkshire game where you chase down 200 and odd with five balls to spare, well, five balls in a T20 game is a lot. You know, we were still winning the games. But it was there was a real shift, I think, in everybody's perception that having been, you know, developed your careers, coming through your early careers, thinking, actually, well, T20, if we can go for eights or less, that's not too bad. But when the boundaries are in a bit and the pitches are as good as the ones that the guys, you know, produce here, you just have to be a bit more realistic and use the away games as a bit of a reality check as well. So I remember that year we went to Derby and we went to Worcester and defended 140 odd and what have you. So that sort of backs up that the plans that you're using and how you execute them are good, and we're bowling well, and ultimately we won the competition that year, and we still going for 200 a couple of times at Trent Bridge, and a bit of head scratching thinking, crack, you know, have we bowled badly, how's that worked and what have you. But I think, you know, it's just changing people, helping people understand their perceptions. And I've said to all of you guys, you know, we're going in the stand at some stage, because that's the nature of the game. You know, Ish Sodhi is a perfect example. He came over and in his mind before his first year he had that he wanted to go for less than 7 and over. He was doing that in international cricket to a degree. But when you play half your games here with the shorter boundaries on pitches that aren't really going to offer you a lot of assistance, to try and go for less than 7, if you judge your day's work by going, you either go for less than 7, I've had a good day, or more than 7, I've had a bad day. And I think, you know, the first year, I don't think he ever came to terms with that, but I think he came back, he was a bit more realistic when he came back. But, yeah, it's just changing people's perceptions a bit, really.
Yeah, I think people have sort of not made fun, but, you know, we call ourselves the cartel. Yeah. But I think the serious side of that is the fact that we are a group, we're a union, and that's that when you are playing the white ball cricket out there and you come off and it's about having everybody there to back you up and sort of reinforce what you're doing is right. And if we've had a bad day, I think we're honest enough to all sit around and have a frank chat about how sort of we go about it. And I think that's where the cartel, yes, it's a little bit of fun, but actually, as a group, you have to stay together as bowlers, don't you?
Definitely. And I think, you know, that it helps us get together. I think the fact that, you know, like you say, you refer to it as the cartel and whatever, and it's got its humorous side to it, but there is a serious side to it. You know, that means that we get together as a group of bowlers and with myself, and we chat about stuff, and if we've had a good day or if we've had a bad day and whatever, we might go out for a beer or whatever it might be. But I think it's a feeling of belonging that you're not on your own, so that, you know, all the other bowlers are going through it at some stage, and you know that, you know, they're feeling your pain and they'll support you through it and whatever. And it's difficult at times for batters. If you've never bowled, you don't know what it's like to trudge off having gone for 10 and over. You know, you don't feel great about yourself. But if in the bigger scheme of things that contributes to keep winning, again, and your mates can reinforce that to you in your bowl, because, you know, it might have been last game they went for 12s, whatever it might be. But working with people who sort of share that same sort of sense of union is good.
See the hassle you're causing, is here, Birksie?
Yes, it takes
you don't see this, do you? You don't see all the head scratching and turn the lights off up there and what we're going to do next. And what's the secret? Because it's been so consistent here over the years.
I don't mean there's no secret, just hard work. I mean, we just get told to prepare the best pitches we can for the one day, and we just try and brush everything out of it, so there's no life in the grass whatsoever.
Well, you're doing that all right. I don't worry about that.
You probably should be saying that with two fast bowlers here.
it is hard work. Yeah. You really, you know, the lads are brushing the wickets out for maybe 300 times to really get the leaf as white as we can. So, so that's what that's why you see the lads out there brushing and brushing, and young Billy was 6'3" once.
Have you noticed the change since like the drainage system and stuff came in? Because I think as players we felt like that made quite a big difference to the pitches here.
I mean, they said so, but then we got scientists in and he said no, it's impossible for the moisture to be drained out by the outfield because the sand won't pull the moisture out of the clay. So it's just a myth.
There you go.
But how true that is. I mean, I found it dried out a lot more as well because we were going to get a lot more water.
Yeah.
But then a lot of the times when it rains, the other cover's on. So you don't get natural rain. So your hand watering just makes you, you know, you water too quick, it runs off. So years ago, we never used to cover up.
Yeah.
But now, when you get a bit of rain, everybody wants everything covered up straight away. It makes it hard work.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Well, I imagine it does anyway. I've never been a groundsman. I've always seen myself sat on the roller like when I'm a bit older.
Relaxing,
Always nice. Always watch my granddad in the sun. He used to just get a brolly up and just roll the wicket for hours and hours.
But you have to do when it's cold as well.
I suppose
somebody else to do it.
That's the other side. Yeah. If you've not got all that, can do it automatic. That's the next level, isn't
it? That's the next level.
Level five groundsman. Level five groundsman.
Why don't you just get a load of those little grass thing, mowers? That just cut the grass on its own now. You can get them, can't you, for your garden?
It's got four of them. They work for him.
I mentioned that to my lads, but they're thinking about getting made redundant, so just scrap that.
Do you have a jobs list in the hut? Do you set them all like the little jobs for the day?
I've got lads that will cut the outfield, lads that are allowed. You never be, I used to plan, but you can't plan because the weather just goes out, you know, everything's out the window. So you're going to plan one day, sun's going to come out, and then it rains. So we just take day by day. Yeah. We have a rough idea what we're going to do. Yeah, we're not bad at it.
Well, that was going to be my next question. What, like, obviously from now until the start of the season, I'm guessing it's going to be pretty full on for you guys. I mean, looking out there now, you can sort of start to see the resemblance of pitches starting to form and things like that. Is it proper full on from now?
Yeah, we've just finished the pre-season rolling. So we've fertilised the square. We've got the panels in for all the pitches. And then we'll start working on the outfield now. You know, outfield's been cut, but we'll start getting all bit of moss we've had over the winter. Start to really get it green. They're really looking at the business.
Well, it does look the business for me already, doesn't it?
How'd you get rid of the moss? Because I've got a bit of moss in my lawn, Chief. So.
Leave me, we've got some special stuff.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes. We'll be going down to his up for some moss. My grass hasn't grown back since last year. It burnt it.
You don't want grass, do you?
Well, it's easy. Sometimes. I don't want. My lawn looks like it's burnt. It's horrible.
Yeah, but then you've
got to
cut
it back.
It is.
I don't cut it.
Oh, yeah.
He's a man that does, doesn't he?
But now you can obviously get that back for you then.
Yeah, cheers. Come down.
Yeah.
Sounds perfect. It's been good, though, those wickets. It's interesting you think about it. But we noticed from being on the field how when opposition turn up, especially opposition bowlers. And a bowling coach will say to me, but your lads love it on here, don't they? And actually, once we get our heads around it, we do, because we know it has a far bigger effect on the opposition coming in. Batters don't know what a good score is. So if you bat first at Trent Bridge on a good pitch where you know people regularly get north of 200, you've got to set off in hot pursuit to start with. You can't really have a look at the wicket. Some of the time that can lead to you being 20 for 3. You know what I mean? And as opposition bowlers, even if their batters get 180, it's like, 180, crikey. Well, there's not many people defend 180 on here. Whereas our lads know that. They understand it. They get to the point where actually, they understand the numbers in the game a bit more. So it, in some respects, I think it helps as well. Once our lads have got used to it.
Yeah, it's actually a good idea. But it's just, I think with this job now, it is getting harder. Because the pitches, everybody wants a bit of, you've got your bowlers to look after, you've got your batters. And now they're chucking the heavy roller back in. It makes it even harder now.
Just going and going, isn't it? Picky,
how's game?
We obviously look at, Berksy just told us about his preparation leading up to season. Obviously, the boys are South Africa, and then we've got a few pre-season games, and things are starting to ramp up now. I'm guessing the boys are going to be putting in some seriously hard yards leading up to that, obviously going out in South Africa, getting the overs under the belt. How important is that, do you reckon, leading into this? Because we've seen at the start of the season, a lot of our bowlers have hit the ground running in recent years.
Yeah.
Do you think it is down to the bowling camp and getting the overs under the belt?
I think some of it, definitely. I think there's a bit of science behind it. So, I think the figures suggest that once you've got past that 150 over mark, your chances of your injury risk is reduced massively. So we try to get sort of 60, 65 overs in the bowling camp. Then we've got pre-season camp. Then we've got our friendly. So we would hope that in that period we can sort of monitor people's workload. So if somebody has a hard day, we can sort of ease it back in. You don't have that luxury in a game. So if you days when we've bowled for the first day and three quarters, if you've bowled 25 overs in day one, we can't say to you, Jake, well, actually say to the captain, well, don't bowl Jake too many, because he's obviously bowled a few yesterday. You don't have control over the numbers. Whereas, like you say, in this lead up now, we're monitoring all the time people's workloads, making sure not that they don't bowl too much, but also they don't bowl too little, and just trying to look after injured people. Get injured, that's the nature of the beast ultimately, but there's certain things you can do which sort of help minimize that. So as you say, we'll go out to South Africa and there'll be a number of overs we're trying to get through there, and then there'll be pre-season, and then we come back and we've got some games, and there's a bit of planning goes on as to how we're going to get the overs into people without sort of but then as we start to get towards the end of pre-season camp, when we get out there, it'll be there's some match play. People are starting to jockey for positions. We've talked about the strength of the cartel, as it were, with adding Chappie to it and with Coggers being fit and obviously hopefully get Brodie back for a bit as well and stuff like that. So, guys aren't daft. They know that there's probably 8 potential first-class bowlers on our staff, and only 3 or 4 of them are going to be playing in that first game. So it's trying to give people opportunity to prove where they are in the pecking order, but without bowling them too much, so that doesn't matter how well they're bowling. If they're on pipey slab, it doesn't really count for much.
Would you say that this period now, you almost take not a step back, but would you say you do your main work before Christmas and the initial bit straight after Christmas? Once it gets into starting to understand match prep, things like that, that's when you leave the bowlers to do their thing and work through their own processes themselves.
Exactly. The calendar sort of looks at the end of last season. We sit and we have a look, and I'll sit and have a look and see if we think there's any technical tweaks that might sort of help the bowlers. We spend the time up to Christmas and, like you say, the straight after New Year, looking at that. We're in a phase of getting ready for the games now, and it doesn't matter how good your action is from pretty much the 1st of April, arguably maybe even earlier that if you count games that will be played on the tour. It's about getting people out as a bowler. If you want to get paid, you've got to get people out. If you don't get enough people out, you don't get paid. So it doesn't matter how good you look while you're doing it. It's the phrase, it's not how, it's how many at the end of the day. Yeah. So you're quite right. Now it's about me sort of letting guys go now and just helping you get to wherever you want to get to feel like you're in the best place.
Very good. Right, it's time.
Is it? Oh my God, there we go.
It's time, Berksy, it's time.
Berksy, you'll get this before me, definitely.
Yeah, there we go. The prep's gone in.
My most embarrassing moment here, I played a game here. I went to play in New Zealand in the winter, and it was I'd played a full season in the first team here in four competitions, and I got there first night in the club rooms. One of the quiz questions was, who won the four domestic competitions in England this last season? And I'd played all season. I got two wrong.
Yeah, I can believe that.
And I played all season. So I've got no chance. I won't have a chance anyway.
Start calling you Blathers.
We'll get it.
Easy. I'll walk, I'll be gone.
Okay, right. His first class bowling average is 30.3. He's played 31 matches and taken 75 wickets. His first class batting average is 26.5.
Gosh, Luke Wood.
Well, that was quick.
Well done.
You have a bit.
Is it Luke Wood?
No, it's not. But you need to come.
Oh, sorry. I was convinced it was Luke. Is it Luke Wood?
No, it won't be Luke
Wood.
It's not Luke
Wood.
It's not Luke Wood.
I was convinced that was Luke Wood there.
Yeah, it's not bad. List A is. Oh, his average is 50.8.
Ouch.
He's played 26 matches and taken 18 wickets. Economy of 5.61.
Can we ask questions? Can we get clues? Is he still? Is he current player?
He's a current player, yes.
Come on, you mustn't know that.
So he's played 31 first class matches, 26 List A matches, and 28 T20 matches. He made his first class debut in 2012.
That's good, Batty, isn't he? Still on the staff.
He's played 70. He got 75 wickets, Bergsy. It's not. It's not going to be
30 games.
30 games. 75.
What about?
That click there was a spinner's action, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, pardon,
did you just say Matt Carter?
Yeah.
He made his debut last year. He made his T20 debut last year, and I've got him down as 28 T20 matches here. He's either had a busy winter,
or you haven't been listening. I
want listening. 75 wickets. Yeah,
I'm going to have to start giving you some clues.
Yeah,
here,
we need some clues.
Damn straight. Hang on, he might have played a few more games for somebody else, though.
Yes, good idea, mate.
Was he somewhere before he came here?
Mm.
Yes, come on.
Yes. Who we got then?
Who came in last year then?
You just go, bowler that came in last year. We've been talking about it for about last 20 minutes.
Ooh!
Have you got it?
Yeah.
Have you got it?
Yeah.
Name him.
Go on.
Zach Chappell.
No.
Come on. Who we got?
No.
Yeah. Might be easy.
Well,
I ain't got a clue, mate. I ain't got a clue. 75 wickets. Made his debut.
We think you watch down there, Berks.
We
do
watch, but I'm trying to think who's really
sat in there watching Jeremy Cowell.
Mate, did he make
there?
His debut last year?
No.
Oh.
First class debut 2012. List A the same. T20 debut 2014.
Ah. Trick question, isn't it?
No, that's right, didn't it? I thought it was debut. Do you reckon?
YouTube been the worst.
Yeah.
Paul Coughlin.
Yes.
Finally. We knew that 10 minutes ago.
No, I didn't.
Didn't you?
No. Well, that, I'm a.
I'm disappointed.
That was poor, wasn't
I did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I gave you far more clues than anybody else. I think when Mull was on it, I gave one stat and he got it.
Yeah, that's because he's boring.
Yeah, but he needed anything. He didn't know.
He got a lot.
He'd have cheated.
I thought I'd have been sort of talking about New Zealand Sauvignon or stuff like that.
Oh,
in
Berkshire,
would have been in like a flash. Which vineyard produces this? Would have been in like flip. Yeah.
Morsey actually told me to bring something up in this podcast.
Did he?
Yeah, your little trip to Paris and how much it cost you for a gin and tonic.
Seriously, don't let. Can it? No, don't. I've only just took your lovely wife
to Paris for Valentine's Day.
Yes,
didn't
I did.
You?
Not for Valentine's Day, for our anniversary, 30th wedding anniversary this year.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, no, it was a sensational trip. It was very, very culturally. Yes.
Heavy in the pocket.
A little bit. Yeah. Yes. Yes, a touch expert. But she's worth it, Jake.
Yes.
Is this going out now? Is it going out?
Yeah, it goes out.
Brilliant. Yeah, yeah. No,
you say every morning how lucky you are to ever.
I do, Jake. Yes. Yes, I do. Yes.
Right. That's enough of that. We need to finish with my advice section. Obviously, it's going to be a bit different because we've got Berks in today. So we've got any gardener's world in or groundsman, whatever.
You give advice?
No, you do.
Oh,
this is.
You said it was your advice section.
Yeah. Have you not been listening to my podcast?
No.
Okay. Don't blame you. This is advice to a club cricketer.
Yeah.
with boy or girl sort of playing in their age group stuff,
yep.
your little nugget of advice that could potentially change their game? It could be mentally, it could be a drill, it could be anything.
Batter or bowler?
Oh, we're going to go bowler because you're a bowling coach.
Okay.
This is your chance to get across your knowledge to these people that want to know.
You know what's coming at you?
Yeah, I do.
Hold your front side, keep your on the ball.
That's what you say every day.
Exactly. It's my mantra.
Yes.
You got to enjoy it initially.
Yeah.
Enjoy it initially. So, straight lines really for bowling. Just everything moves in a straight line. So I talk about to people, if you stand at the end of your mark and your target's just outside off stump, if I asked you to walk to your target and touch your target, you'd walk in a dead straight line. So when you bowl, you want to be running up in a straight line, jumping in a straight line, arms and legs moving in a straight line, head going in a straight line, and follow through in a straight line. Now, every time something goes off the straight, something else has to happen to get it back on the straight. So the simplest way is just keep everything moving in a straight line.
And the best way to, would you say, like a piece of string?
Piece of string's ideal. That's ideal. Just put a piece of string down and run up and down a piece of string.
Yeah, from off stump to your
off stump to your target, just outside off stump.
Easy as that.
There it is. Simple as that. And hold your front side, keep your wrist behind the ball.
That's how you get paid the big bucks, right?
Yeah.
Now we've got.
Now we're interested. This is interesting. Now
I'm actually interested in this one.
Oh, so thanks. Cheers.
So your bit of advice to let's go a local groundsman.
Right, you put your mower away end of October. It's been quite a mild winter.
Yeah.
And at the end of the year, you'd be shaving your pitches down. Just make sure you check your height of your mower because you don't want to be dropping it. Drop it up, lift it up to about 20 mil. Yeah, just trim your square off at 20 mil to start with and then gradually take it down. Don't get your mower out at the like you did at the end of last season and shave it down to about 3 mil. Make sure you check your height of your mower.
Always check the height of your mower.
That's a nugget, that.
That is.
That's worth coming up here for, that.
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the same for my... Is that what's happened to
my
garden?
Yeah, that'll happen. Because what'll happen is, because it's grown over the winter, so now you perhaps know you lot, you want to cut your grass till after October.
Yeah.
It'll be growing to be about 2 inches long. So what you do, you shave it. So you need to make sure your mower is set at eye out.
Do you have to measure the blade of grass? Well, how do I know? Because I've got a little cheeky
brush
little
fly up. Mo. Yeah, but brush it up. Have a look. Yeah, tape measure out. Get a brusher up. Yeah, you'll be fine. Yeah.
Can you imagine what my neighbour's going to think? Looking at his bedroom, I'm measuring the length of my grass.
if you want a quality lawn, where
exactly.
you go?
This is it. If you want your garden to look like that, you have to measure your mower blade.
I mean, we mow this 3 or 4 times a day. You perhaps mow yours twice a month.
You know, if you're like on a day off, could we come and use this like as a... Could I have a barbecue on there? Save messing about with my lawn, I could come and use yours.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, there's only 3 burgers.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Then.
That's all these do anyway. Yeah, Sit down there and eat and drink.
Eat too much, before stone on and wait in the summer.
Just keeps telling me to bring jelly beans out. That's all. Talking of eating, I'd like to register a bit of a complaint with this podcast from last year. When Luke was running it last year, we got bacon sandwiches. There's not even... I mean, you've come in with a coffee on your own. Obviously, you've sorted yourself out. That's fine, Jack. But disappointed. But I know that's not you, really. That's the sort of behind the light sort of... That's the staff there, isn't it, really? Yeah. Just something to be... It's just something, that's all.
It's cutbacks, isn't it? It's got to be.
I think it might be austerity. Yeah, it definitely is
cutback. But apparently, it's running a lot smoother this year. And I think because last year, you'd have been too hyped about the bacon, getting the bacon in, you forget about the good stuff. I think today, we've covered a lot of great points. We've got an unbelievable lawn and we're producing quality fast bowlers. That's what this podcast's all about, getting it over to the
Happy
people
days, then.
It's not a bad answer. It still doesn't help the fact that
how can you be disappointed when this podcast ends? You can have a good lawn and you have a good fast bowler under your hands. So that's it, jobs are good.
But you're gonna be hungry, I'll still be hungry, won't I?
Just think how good the answers would have been if we'd have had a bacon sandwich.
All right.
Yeah, and bounce off.
All right, no, thanks for coming on, guys.
Really,
it's been there.
Pleasure.
It's been really good. I've enjoyed it. And if you guys have all enjoyed listening to it, don't forget to leave comments on all forms of social media with the hashtag Talk of Trent Bridge. Thanks for listening, guys.